guys so much for making this moment special. This is your guys' moment as well. We've always had the best fans in the league, and now we've got the best dang team in the league to match you guys, man. We thank you so much. But something we've never done is go back to back. So let's go ahead and start talking about that.
This Grey Cup is for us, 2025. Grey Cup champs forever, baby. Let's go, baby. Love you guys, brothers.
Well, the celebration was alive and well yesterday, no doubt. On the Green Mile, were you on the parade route at all? I was positioned nicely on the parade route to watch them as they filed by. And, I mean, this team was in a mood yesterday. They were, and by team, I'm expanding it much bigger than just the players. I mean, you saw coaches, you saw admin and office staff, you saw the cheerleading crew, and of course the fans were out in full force. It was a great celebration yesterday, a great parade, a great group of speeches at the ledge, and now people are shopping for merch. What's going to be in your stocking? I'm sure there's going to be Grey Cup merch. In fact, they've had to do the second order. They had the preliminary stock that they probably almost sold out of, and they'll restock the shelves in time for Christmas. Good morning. It's Evan Bray. Great to have you here with another full show today. We got lots going on in the news. Another opportunity for the Liberal government to fall yesterday. This one kind of slid by. Not a lot of people were talking about it, but it didn't happen, confirming that no federal parties are wanting or ready for a federal election. Mayor Cynthia Block dousing the flames of the rumors of a special homeless levy in Saskatoon. Donald Trump went off on a reporter who brought up Epstein. So our open lines this morning after nine will be hopping, I'm sure. According to the latest Major City Insights report, both of Saskatchewan's major cities are seeing pretty steady momentum in the right direction. Regina having a bounce back year after a slower 2024. Saskatoon outpacing other major cities across Canada. So we've got David Rostovsky, an economist with the Conference Board of Canada, on the show to talk about that. The president of the Saskatchewan Urban Municipalities Association. We haven't chatted with her since the federal budget came down. We'll see the impacts of that. We're going to talk Northern Lights with U of R astronomer Samantha Lawler, and of course, Saskatchewan's smartest radio listener coming up at 11. Let's dig in to today's Big Talker.
Let's get down to business, shall we?
Welcome. Let's begin.
The Evan Bray Show, The Big Talker.
Well, as we have talked about last week, Prime Minister Mark Carney unveiled the latest list of major projects, three critical mineral extraction projects, a nickel mine in Ontario, the transmission line on the northern BC coast. And of course, the Prime Minister, as we've heard many times, referring to these projects as transformative. They represent billions in new investment and support thousands of jobs. But the announcements always continue to raise questions about what was not included, what was not prioritized, and we've talked about pipelines a lot. My first guest this morning is someone who I have enjoyed listening to in terms of interviews, reports she's been quoted in, podcasts she's been on. Heather Exner-Perot is Senior Fellow and Director of Energy, Natural Resources and Environment at the MacDonald Laurier Institute in Ottawa. She's a Special Advisor to the Business Council of Canada. And she's a proud Saskatchewanian, despite the fact she doesn't live here now. Heather, thank you so much for joining the program.
Great to be here.
Great ties to Saskatchewan, am I right?
Okay, you're right. And I have to tell your listeners that you're all calling me on a 306 number. I still kept my SaskTel account, the best cell phone company in Canada. But, of course, born and raised, and Emily moved to Alberta about 6 years ago. My parents were from Indian Head and Grayson, for those that are wondering.
It's great to have you on the program, and I enjoy listening to you. Like I said, I caught you on a couple of podcasts recently, and I thought we need to bring Heather onto the program. So these announcements of these projects on Mark Carney's list over the last little while, I saw one time you were quoted as saying these lists tend to pick winners and losers. Maybe let's start there.
Well, I mean, that is absolutely what they do. So it's not all bad. You know, we can get into some of the merits. You know, some projects need government financing. But to go back to where this list, you know, why we started here in the first place was a campaign promise in April to build baby build, to build faster than we have in generations. And the government's first major act, you know, was to pass the Building Canada Act, C5, which would allow them to kind of, you know, override some bad regulations to move projects ahead faster. And what we've got instead was a major projects office where the government refers you know, what are obviously politically favorite, you know, kinds of projects, ones that, you know, fit their particular ideology. So they tend to focus on critical minerals, ones that are regionally sprinkled. So every province, every region is kind of getting, you know, their slice of the pie. They have not done anything. They have actually not used any of the powers that C5 passed in June that we thought was an emergency that we need to pass it right away. None of those powers have been used to actually make any permitting or regulatory processes easier for particular projects. And the bigger thing for me, no legislation or policy improvements have been made actually to the entire framework, which is where, you know, I often say this, you know, there might be 10 or 15 major projects on that list. There's 500 major projects in the Natural Resources Canada major projects inventory. They would all like a smoother ride. They would all like to get to final investment decisions sooner. And we haven't seen that work being done yet.
It is, you know, I mean, obviously the decisions are made for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is what's going to drive the economy. But there's lots of criticism that they're picking. I've seen it described as low-hanging fruit, projects that are well on their way to even being completed, and this is a quick and easy box check and a win for them. Your thoughts on how they're choosing and prioritizing these projects?
Well, they are choosing ones that are, I think, you know, almost, except for maybe one, already approved. You know, the example, the one that we got in Saskatchewan is the Four Iron Copper Mine, which is obviously already under construction. And mining tends to be, you know, primarily under provincial jurisdiction anyway. So they haven't, which is to say that they have not expended any of their political capital on any of these projects yet. These are projects that were far advanced, were approved, where the provinces wanted them. In general, in all the cases that they chose, First Nations were on board. And so it was easy to say, you know, as a PR exercise to say, we have momentum. We have all these projects. We have $56 billion, whatever the number is, to move them ahead. But they haven't used, again, their political capital to unwind some of the trickier ones where, you know, different provinces, different First Nations groups, you know, may not all be on board, or where the regulatory system is just not, you know, is not conducive.
So let's talk about that. Heather Exner-Perot is my guest this morning, political capital and will on a pipeline. I've seen the survey. I think the number was 79% of Canadians either were in favor of or see the need for a pipeline. We're hearing maybe that they're close. Your thoughts? Are we going to see this come to fruition?
So, yeah. So, you know, really since January, most of the pipeline polls I've seen have been over 70%. And sometimes if it's a little more specific, Northern Gateway, it might be on the lower end of the 70s, but it's still, I call these apple pie and motherhood numbers. There's not a lot of 70 plus issues that governments want to get on the wrong side of. And yet, they have been, and why is that? Because within the Liberal caucus and parts of the Liberal base, obviously in Quebec, they aren't in favor. You know, the base isn't in favor of a pipeline. And with the BC NDP, although a pipeline is popular, majority certainly approves it in BC as well, for the BC NDP base, they don't. And David Eby himself just went through a leadership review where he had to get, obviously, the support from his base and his caucus. And so that has been the holdup, I would say, the Liberal and the BC NDP bases, and the budget vote. And now we're getting to, you know, and now maybe there's a little bit more room. We had hoped to have that deal for the Grey Cup Summit. We obviously don't. But even today, there was a Globe and Mail news story with a bit of a scoop saying that we, you know, sources are saying from within government that we are getting close to a deal that would include a West Coast pipeline. And that is because Privy Council Officer Michael Sabia is leading negotiations. He had been leading the U.S.-Canada negotiations before Trump cut those off. And then he directed his attention apparently to Alberta and Ottawa. So there's still cautious optimism. We've been in a situation of cautious optimism for 9 months. But the cautious optimism continues. And I have to say, I think Danielle Smith has her own AGM with the UCP, I think, on the 28th. And she will have to say something to them. Something will have to be resolved in some format by then.
Heather Exner-Perot is my guest, Senior Fellow, Director of Energy, Natural Resources and Environment at the MacDonald Laurier Institute in Ottawa. It feels as though, and I've said this on the program before, that oil and gas has become the redheaded stepchild for the federal government. Aside from removing regulation that hurts the industry, is there a business case to be made, Heather, not only to kind of strip back the regulation and let the market and investment start to roll in, but even enhance new production of oil and gas in our country?
So it's becoming, you know, clear with almost each passing day that there is. And I think that was, you know, one of the main lines or justifications that the Trudeau Liberals had was that basically, you know, oil demand was going by the wayside because of EVs. And although they were, you know, cutting off the ability of the oil sands to expand, there was no global need for them to expand anyway. So it's really, you know, they were just saving them, a few years and some stranded assets. But it's become increasingly clear in the last 3 months that, you know, the setup is very different. And things that we've been looking at predicting the peak of U.S. shale oil production. And it was this combination of hydraulic fracturing and horizontal drilling that unleashed, you know, all this oil and gas in the United States for the last 10 years, kind of dunked on prices and made the oil sands look expensive. But, you know, these are non-renewable resources, and the United States has just gorged on their oil and on their gas. They've never exported more. They've never consumed more. And now, you know, they're starting to deplete some of their best inventories. And so the markets in the last 3 months have definitely picked up on this. They're finally finally making a decision of moving some of the money from American companies, American resources, which are dwindling, and into Canadian long-life assets. And so we have seen Canadian oil companies outperforming the S&P 500, outperforming global oil and gas averages. And in Saskatchewan, particularly, we saw Baytex again sell off some of their assets in Texas, in the Eagle Ford, I believe, and reinvesting here in Saskatchewan, especially around the Whiteminster area. So the writing is on the wall. Markets don't lie. Sometimes they're wrong, but markets don't lie. And the markets think that there's a very good business case for Canadian oil and gas.
Are we going to see, Heather, the Carney government retract, pull back on, amend some of these, what we call the 9 dirty laws, I know, or the 9 bad laws for oil and gas? We've seen Danielle Smith talk about that. Our Premier Scott Moe has talked about that. Are we going to see a change in direction?
And if I try to look with a generous eye, and I know lots of people in Saskatchewan are done looking at the Ottawa with a generous eye, but if I do, Budget 2025 actually had some Easter eggs, which I would say are positive, you know, which certainly keep the door open to adjust those. One is saying, you know, the emissions cap that we may not, and the emissions cap, by the way, is still draft. It never was passed. And saying that, you know, if we do, you know, a few other things, we may not need the emissions cap. In my opinion, that has killed it politically. They've let the cat out of the bag, basically saying we don't need this horrible, expensive emissions cap. And I think that the market does not believe that there will be emissions cap. And that is one of the reasons why some of the oil and gas companies are overperforming in the last week or two. On the greenwashing bill, that is one that the average Canadian doesn't know or care about. But I think Mark Carney should know, you know, why the greenwashing bill was bad. Actually, even if you did want net zero finance, if you did want ESG disclosures, is very bad policy. And just yesterday, if you didn't see, BC said it was repealing its EV mandate. And that leaves a lot of room for the federal government to repeal their own EV mandate, which they're under review of. The tricky one is going to be the oil tanker ban, because, again, David Eby has come out in BC with such a, you know, such a line in the sand, such a scorched earth attitude towards this new pipeline. That will be tricky for the federal government, and I'm curious to see how they get around that.
We're very close to out of time, but I really wanted to get to the critical minerals discussion. So maybe I can limit you to a minute, Heather, and just ask, you know, we hear lots from this federal government about the markets that are there for critical minerals, but it's a wide swath, critical minerals. Is there a need? Should they be honing in on specific sectors within that umbrella?
Well, they haven't to the extent I would like to see on uranium and potash. But on the other hand, I think, you know, uranium and potash are doing pretty much just fine. We saw, and I keep saying, you know, record potash production, record uranium production, and a great cap. What a year for Saskatchewan. And I expect we will, you know, uranium is doing great, and I think we'll see some new mines develop maybe, you know, a year later than we would have liked. But actually that just increases uranium prices, which increases royalties. So I think we will see movement on uranium. And again, what the potash people tend to want is not new ports, but again, better access to the ports that we already have, and addressing some of the labor issues that always affect rail and port. And so not looking for a Churchill, but looking for some strong action on labor.
Heather, always appreciate listening to your opinions on this stuff. We'll get you back on the program again soon.
Great. Thanks so much.
Heather Exner-Perot, who is a senior fellow and director of Energy, Natural Resources, and Environment at the McDonnell Laurier Institute in Ottawa. Let's take a break. We'll be back getting close to open lines at 9 here on 650 CKOM 980 CJME.